Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
More people, of course, are living longer, many with better quality of life. Even still, aging parents often require support and care they've never needed before. Laura Tamblyn Watts is president and CEO of CanAge, a national seniors advocacy organization. She's got a new book out aimed at improving communications when the roles reverse, when the adult children suddenly find themselves the informal caregivers of their older parents. The book is called Let's Talk About Aging Parents, a real-life guide to solving problems with 27 essential conversations. Laura Tamblyn Watts also lectures at the University of Toronto's Factor Inwentosh Faculty of Social Work, and she joins us now. Great to have you back here at TVO.
Always great to be on the show.
Is there something particularly timely about why you wanted to write this book now?
All of the time, in every circumstance, these days, we're talking about aging parents, but we're talking about it and pulling our hair out. What we haven't actually had is ways to have a kitchen table conversation and still be liking each other enough to have dinner at the table afterwards. Mm. And that is what prompted it.
Every poll I've ever seen says people want to live at home in familiar surroundings for as long as they can. I think we also know that the healthcare system, such as it is, home care, supportive care, PSWs, all that, it cannot handle that right now. So how's this going to work exactly?
We've never had this demographic shift. I mean, you can't open the newspaper or turn on the radio without hearing about our aging demographic. That's fine, but we need to move to some solutions. And certainly our healthcare system isn't going to be the backbone. And it's already not. But that's going to be under even greater pressure. So what we're going to see is families, and I define that in the broadest possible terms, supporters, people who are part of our close-knit community, they're going to have to lean in. And they're not just leaning in by providing some emotional support or even a little bit of tech support. It's actually financial. It's really healthcare in a heavy type of care environment. And it's also trying to think about preventive ways to stop those triggering events like falls from happening.
Well, let me follow up on that. Do you think, based on your experiences with lots of people who are dealing with this, are we ready for the complexity of care to come?
Oh, not even beginning to be ready for it. But what families are saying is they are having this thrust upon them. And because we're having a different type of care relationship and the number of adult children, and again, I use that term really very broadly, used to be, you know, you'd have eight kids and two parents and you could kind of divide it up. And if someone didn't have a good relationship, maybe that one kid doesn't involve themselves. What we call our caregiver burden has switched. And my experience, which I have sort of six aging parents in my life, is not an unusual one because there's different marriages and there's different systems and fewer children. And so that means we need to be really creative for how we actually help to support our aging parents and not assume that our healthcare system is going to do it for us.
You used a word there, though, the caregiver burden. Mm-hmm. I know we don't like to think of it as a burden to take care of our parents as they age, because after all, they took care of us when we were just wee little ones growing up. But is it a burden?
Look, it is. I mean, it's hard in the same way that actually having young children is a burden. It doesn't mean it's not also a joy.
Okay.
It doesn't mean it's not purposeful and meaningful. It doesn't even mean that it's not something you'd want to sign up for. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. And it's getting harder because we have fewer and fewer resources. Unless you're truly rich, you know, getting full-time care at the home, between $100,000 and $300,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's just not the basis for most people.
People don't believe that. I know, because I've had this conversation with a lot of people lately. And when you find out, six big figures is what it costs to make this happen. People aren't ready for this, are they?
They're really not ready for it. And they're not ready for the fact that options are very limited as well. And so they think, well, you know, I'll just go to long-term care. Well, about 43,000 people in Ontario are on the waiting list. And I think that's an underestimation. as of this year. And the degree of frailty that we have even in our retirement homes, which we designed to be places of active living, average age is 86 in a retirement home, and at least 40% have a diagnosis of dementia. And you know, if that's a diagnosis, there's lots more than that there.
So they say it's active living, but there's a lot of inactive living going on in those settings.
It's a very frail environment,
right,
generally.
Right. Let's do an excerpt from the book here. Sheldon, if you would, bring this up and I'll read along for those listening on podcast. Let's set some expectations at the very beginning. People don't change much. Even when it comes to everyday or emergency care for your aging parent, if your macho brother was always too busy to help around the house, chances are he's not going to be volunteering to scrub your mom's kitchen every day. Some folks may surprise you, though, so starting off by including everyone in this conversation can really help. Okay, how do we start here? Somebody, I presume, if you've got multiple siblings or cousins or however you're doing it, someone's got to take the lead, right? Is that how it starts?
Usually someone takes the lead unless nobody takes the lead. And that actually happens too. So let's not presume the family is really well coordinated. Let's not assume that all the relationships are loving and wonderful, because most families, there's complexity to them. So this book kind of calls a spade a spade. Who has mental health issues? Who's living in Vancouver and only comes for every other Christmas? Who's actually doing the care at home, but perhaps is struggling with drug and alcohol addictions and has never actually had a job, but they're the ones who've at home because they're not that busy, because they're not that employed. Real families are complicated. Usually there's somebody that takes the lead, or something happens and then they all get called together to try to figure out how to problem solve it.
And is there invariably a disproportionate burden on one sibling versus another?
There often is. I mean, it's, you know, we give these archetypes to it as well. So it's, you know, the good school teacher, you know, daughter is often the one, or, you know, the financial manager son. We give these, you know, archetypes to it. And sometimes they exist for a reason. There's something to that. It's true that there is generally more involvement by women than men. Having said that, that's starting to switch around a little bit. It's not quite as stereotypical as it used to be. And some of that is because technology is starting to play an interesting role. And the book starts talking about, well, what can you do to actually use tech in a positive way? And for financial management and support, so much of it can be done online now or on an app. And so you don't necessarily have to be at the house or at the bedside as much to provide some forms of support.
Let me give you, for instance, though, if you've got, let's say, multiple children in the case, three or four kids, and they've got parents who are ailing and need help, and there's one kid who's you know, just irresponsible and really has never been much of a help along the way, is it in your interest, is it in your better interest to try to convince that reprobate to, you know, pull up his socks and chip in, or is it better to write him off and say, you know what, we can't rely on them, let's just forget it and we'll do it ourselves?
Well, as a lawyer, I don't teach in the faculty of law for a reason. I teach in the faculty of social work, because most of these issues are people problems. They're not really legal or financial problems. I think it's important to really understand who people are and be okay with that. If your brother's got drug and alcohol addictions or has always been the one that's been living on mom's dime, that's not going to change. So understand who they are and what they need and what their expectations are. And again, try to understand that the personality types are pretty baked in by this time. I wrote this book for people 35 to 75, because I've got folks who are caregivers in their mid-70s of their 102-year-old parents.
Oof. How does that work?
Well, we used to be a sandwich generation. Now we're a club sandwich generation.
Because they've got grandchildren, too.
They've got great-grandchildren in some cases. And so we really see these care relationships and these interrelationships changing. But what we haven't really had is a way to stop that kind of gloss over what should be a family and what should happen, to get into actually some of those real conversations and grasp, okay, who's really going to be in a good place to do what? Let's not set people up for a lack of success. So the reprobate may be funny.
Oh.
And so maybe the thing that they contribute is some funny time over a cup of coffee with mom. And it really, besides, you know, it was always her good son in her heart, even though just he was misunderstood by everybody else, right? So maybe he's the one that does the puzzles and the crossword puzzles with her. And that social connection, that's important too.
Okay, let me circle back to that club sandwich line, because we're used to hearing about the sandwich generation where, you know, if you're in the middle, you're dealing with older parents and still with your own kids. But the club sandwich has got multiple levels. So you're potentially talking about 70-year-old parents who are dealing with their parents and their own children and their own grandchildren.
Yes.
That's a lot to juggle.
It's a lot to juggle. Yeah. And these relationships are iterative, too. So it's often who needs help when. And sometimes you have a triggering event and then you're going to need help forever on. And that's very true if you have a fall and break a hip, or this diagnosis of dementia, something like that, or a cancer diagnosis that's really changed health. But it doesn't mean that the other person in that relationship has changed. They may want you to be active and healthy in golf. And so we have to think about what needs to support a person when. What we often see is that the spouse of a person who needs help ends up having a medical crisis of their own, because the I can do it myself, or I don't want to confront it, or I don't want to start asking for roles to change, can lead to physical and emotional breakdown.
Let me get your advice on how devious we're allowed to be. For example, let's say mom is 90 and she still wants to drive.
Yes.
And that scares the hell out of you to let mom out there on the roads. But legally, she still has her driver's license. Should you lie about, oh, sorry, the car's not working today? Should you hide her keys? Should you take the battery out of the key? Like, how much of this should you do?
So in the book, I do a couple of different things. I sort of help you landscape what your situation is going to be like, and with humor. It's important to know that the book is funny on purpose, because some of the things that we do are also funny, and you kind of have to have a bit of a laugh as you're going through some of these challenging situations. So I often rank the types of conversations. If your dad is like this, try this approach. If your dad is like this, try this approach. And then there's usually the approach called the nuclear option. You know, if you do this, it might blow up your relationship, but if you really need to. And driving is one of those issues where we have a lot of strategies. I've had alternators taken out. I've had the car that needs to go to the shop. The key doesn't quite fit in the lock anymore. Someone's going to borrow the car. I mean, there's many different ways that you can do modification to let people get comfortable with other forms of transportation. You know, how you approach it depends on your own opinions and ethics and families. But what I would say is most people don't want to cause harm. And so the book has a lot of harm reduction strategies in it.
When you say you've had, does that mean you have employed these strategies in your own family dynamic?
I can neither confirm nor deny that that's the case.
I think I know what that means. Okay, but in case they're watching, you don't want to fess up that you've done this.
We were the primary supporters for several sets of grandparents and a great aunt and great uncle. And my mom was my age, 52, when she retired from teaching, not really retired. She stopped to become a full-time caregiver to these six individual older adults, and driving was certainly one of those issues. Now, if you're in an urban center, things like Uber are fantastic because they don't make a person feel dependent, and assuming they've got money and assuming that that's a comfortable thing. But, you know, the old taxi cab style was complicated when you had to manage cash and worried about it, and when you're trying to figure out how best to do that. But if you can have something like Uber and you send that from your office, you know, in North Bay, and you're picking up your, your mother in Barrie, all you have to do is send a car. So some of these types of things in urban environments are easier, harder in rural communities.
Yeah, because for us, it's a safety issue, but for them, it's freedom.
It's a huge issue.
You know, you're basically telling them, give up the freedom that you have understood for the last 75 years of your life. That's a hard thing to do to somebody.
And the all or nothing approach is something that we try to avoid in the book, right? So mostly you can help with reduction of things, right? Don't drive at night. The roads are really slippery. The freezing rain is going to start. I need to change the tires. And what we see is that women, particularly for driving, self-limit. Men sometimes need a technological or an automotive reason to self-limit. And they'll get there too. So then we know that older drivers who are in a small community, just kind of making their way around at 30 kilometers an hour in a rural village, they're not the risk. They're not the risk. Yeah. And in fact, if you look at who the worst drivers are, it's often, you know, young men speeding down highways that are actually the risk. So understanding that we're not just assuming because they're older that they're a bad driver, typically that's not the case. But let's just see if we can do some harm reduction along the way.
Let's talk about guilt along the way. Here's another excerpt from the book. Guilt, you write, is a weird emotion. And as awful as it is to experience, it actually comes from a positive place of morality and right doing. If you feel guilty, it can be a red flag that you should examine a particular situation or action more deeply. Think of it as a bit of an emotional divining rod, telling you that something lying beneath needs exploring. Okay, this sort of gets to the fact that this is all new stuff for a lot of people, right? Absolutely. By the time you're in your whatever it is, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, dealing with older parents, it's new responsibilities for you. So how do you know if you're doing the right thing?
Well, you don't. But here's what you try to think to yourself. I think of it as Maslow's hierarchy, okay? Is food and shelter and safety, are we getting those things sorted out? And a lot of those issues are actually at the core of it. Is mom eating? Right? Is there a wound that needs care? Because skin breakdown is one of those things that's really important. Am I managing physical pain? Then you kind of work your way up to self-actualization. And what we know is loneliness and social isolation is this bad, we've talked about this before, as smoking 15 cigarettes a day and can take up to 8 years off your life. So these things are all important. What I would offer is you can't be everything to everyone. And what is it that you can self-audit? What are you going to be good at doing? Who else is in your circle that can be good at doing some things? And then where are community-based services? Because it doesn't have to always be you, right? If you're feeling guilty, it probably means you need to assess what's on your plate that you're not good at, what isn't being done, and where can you get some extra help from organizations to assist you.
How do you start that conversation, though, with a parent who says, look, I've taken perfectly good care of myself for 85 years and I don't need you sticking your nose in my business? How do you start that?
That was kind of the premise of the book. And everyone has the right to say, you know what? It's my life. Get out. Unless they have a mental capacity issue. And the challenge here is there's about 7 to 10 years between the signs of dementia and a diagnosis of dementia, 7 to 10 years. And some of those things locate themselves around risk and understanding about how bad a decision is. And that's the dance that we all have to do. But part of what I usually like to ask is, how can you come at it in a non-threatening way? So if you want your parents to do powers of attorney, or if you want them to think about a decision they're making, maybe ask their advice instead of you telling them what to do. It usually puts them on their back feet because they're ready for being told that it's their fault or that they have to do something. You could say something like, you know, Mom, it's tax season, or, you know, it's time for me to rethink my wills. And so have you done them? I would love your advice on how to do that.
That's clever.
A good strategy, yeah.
Kind of a entry through the side door as opposed to the front door.
It's their role typically to tell you what to do. Let them. And then it opens up a conversation. So this book is full of those non-confrontational techniques with a few of the nuclear options in there.
Well, I mean, some of these questions are very tricky. I'm just going through the list of the table of contents right now. You got 27 questions in here. What if my parent is toxic? Like, what if you have an awful relationship with your parent? Do you actually have a legal, moral, ethical responsibility to intervene?
A lot of relationships are toxic. And that's one of the things I wanted to write this book about, because when we get out there, there's this assumption that all families are lovely and loving and have great relationships. What if your father was a horrible human being and abused you? So, and you're the only child? And I get those questions a lot. And I say, you know, are you legally required? Well, in some jurisdictions, people may be surprised, and Ontario is one of them. We actually have something called filial obligation laws. Put my lawyer hat on there for a minute. And you may actually be financially required to contribute. Now, it's almost never used. It's very, very rarely used. But in circumstances where you may have $10 million and your dad is destitute, you know, you may be looked at to help. Mostly it's about relationships that are sort of social and ethical and moral. And I kind of help you think through that, because in some cases you may actually decide the best thing I can do is walk away because he abused me and I'm worried I'm going to abuse him.
What if it's the other way around? What if dad's got 10 million bucks and dad just got himself a new girlfriend and wants to leave what you thought was coming to you to her? How do you intervene there?
Exactly. And when we think about things, there's either predatory marriages or dad just having a good time. I had a case that I was supporting a family on. The guy was in his 90s, went to Vegas, got married to, you know, kind of the Playboy bunny. It wasn't actually, but nearly so.
Somebody not age appropriate.
Somebody, put it that let's way? Just say yeah. There was about a 70-year age difference between the two.
Oh, my. Okay.
And a very different style of life difference. The kids who were in their, I don't know, 60s at that point, had the reaction that you might imagine. And in that particular case, dad said, yeah, you know what? I made my money. My kids have been living off of me forever. They should get a job. I have this great opportunity. I'm going to live my life, and was perfectly mentally capable. And I thought, well, Vegas is made for bad decisions. And in his case, he was living it up. Mostly that's not what happens. Mostly what you see is some type of undue influence or abuse. But you also have to ask yourself, what are your expectations and what are they based on? Because they may not be based on anything that's really going to happen.
Some of these chapters are very, very, well, let's put it this way. They deal with very delicate issues.
Sure.
What if your parent is an alcoholic? What if your parent is starting to show signs of dementia? What if your parent is suddenly incontinent? How do you handle all of that?
Again, I think it's about gathering yourself up and looking at the situation kind of both what's in front of you. Mad mom won't go out because she's worried about, you know, fecal incontinence.
Yeah.
Literally, I can't go outside because I'm worried. Okay, there's actually things you can do about that. And you need to know about products, and you need to know about services, and you need to know that Botox, who knew? Botox down there can make a big difference. Unless you spent your life learning these things, how would you know? So, understanding both what's behind mom not going out, having the conversation, and her even admitting to you that she's worried she's going to poop her pants, that conversation is important.
Let's finish up on this. I suspect for a lot of the kids in the club sandwich generation, which is a new term that you've laid on us today, this is a conversation starter they just really have tried to put off for as long as possible.
Absolutely.
They don't want to have it.
No way.
So give us some advice. How do you even start to get your head around the notion that you got to have this conversation because it's time?
You got to go to the house. That is the most important thing.
Their turf.
Absolutely.
Not yours.
Not your turf. You need to go to the house and you need to make a cup of tea. You need to open the fridge and see what the state of the fridge is. You need to go downstairs and see if the laundry is there. You need to go have a look at the bathroom and the living room. And you need to not look like you're inspecting it in the way that you do. Because it's important to see how people are actually living. If mom is actually not able to sleep in her bed because she can't get in and out of it anymore, she's not going to tell you that. You need to see it. So you got to lay eyes on it. And then you need to not tell them what to do.
Yeah. Diplomacy is really helpful here, right?
You didn't like it when you were 20, and you probably still don't like it now. Ask questions. Hey, what's working for you right now? Ask them about their friends. How's Mrs. So-and-so, Mr. Such-and-such? How are they doing right now? They'll probably tell you. That's a nice way in of you. Oh, they fell. Oh, he can't get out of bed. Oh, he's in a retirement home. Oh, he's got cognitive impairment. Oh, he's got hearing loss. Tell me a bit more about that. Ask about other people so that they settle into relationships and they will express to you worries. People repeat what they're worried about. Listen for things that they're repeating. Reflect back to them about that. So listen to understand, not to answer.
See, this is why we keep having you back on this program, because you've got lots of good advice that we need to hear. And a lot of it is between the pages of this book. Let's Talk About Aging Parents, a real-life guide to solving problems with 27 essential conversations. That's Laura Tamblyn Watts. Laura, as always, great to have you here at TVO.
Great to be here.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.